Oh, you know what that sound means? You know what that song is? It's time for another What's for Dinner. Hi, guys. How you doing? It's me. It's Flip. And it's you. Whoever you are, you're listening. And whether you're listening on Stitcher, you download this on iTunes, you got it right off the site, who cares? Who gives a shit? That's what I say. Again, I'll say it again. Who gives a shit? You found your way here, and I'm very glad you did. For the next hour or so, it's going to be a lot of... I feel like I'm an AM DJ now. For the next hour or so, we're going to have some smooth talk here on What's for Dinner. This week is fun. I'm actually... I'm working in Vegas. I'm actually recording this right now from my lovely hotel room here in Las Vegas, where I'm at the Improv at Harrah's. And this is a very rare week for me in Vegas because I'm actually working with two guys that I know fairly well. The host is a guy that I've met a few times, very nice guy, Dylan. And the headliner, though, I shouldn't say I know him fairly well. I know him pretty goddamn well. You know him, too, because not only is he incredibly funny, he has many TV credits, most of which he doesn't want to have anymore because he wants to work more in the writing, and God bless him for that, for having integrity.
I don't want to have them. I want the credits too. I want to make sure that the jokes are on point as well.
No, of course. I was just fucking with it. We're literally having this discussion right before we started recording. But if you might have recognized that voice, ladies and gentlemen, my guest tonight, the ever funny, ever hilarious, ever cool and suave, Ty Barnett, everybody. Ty Barnett's here.
Hey, yo!
Yay!
See how both of us made it look like it was a bunch of people clapping in here?
It's just the two of us. Two of us providing
The audio and everything. We're doing background, all that. With the key grips, the we get the donuts and all that shit.
Mm-hmm.
So we're doing it kamikaze style.
Yes.
But I have on underwear. I'm not really sure about Flip, but I don't really need to know that.
I never wear underwear. It's too constraining.
Way too much.
Matter of fact, these pants
That's
are a little...
okay.
There we go.
Nah.
What do you think of that?
Not at all. Nothing.
Have you ever seen anything that red and bumpy?
Not on purpose.
No, so Ty Barnett is here. We're working together in Vegas, which is that I love when this happens, when I get to work with my friends in Vegas, because it feels very rat packy. You know what?
Because here's the thing with Vegas, it's one of those places that when you come here, you have to be here with somebody or know somebody. Otherwise, you just look lonesome.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying. So when you actually can have a meal with somebody and it doesn't look like you're talking crazy or anything, then it makes Vegas more fun. Otherwise, for me personally, I want to stay in a room, go do my show, eat, I go do whatever I got to do, and then I go back. But since I'm here and I know the guys that I'm working with, it's actually, last night was my first night. It was super fun. We hung out afterwards, so we didn't have to have that creepy at the bar by yourself moment. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, hoping somebody from the show happens to walk by and going, oh, hey, you were great. And
thank you so much.
Please.
Just talk to me some more. Please.
I need some interaction.
So no, we didn't have that, but it's great, man, because like I said, plus me, you and I have known each other. I'm trying to think how long we've known each other now.
Well, we...
since at least 2006.
Yeah, because that's when we were on Last Comic together.
Yes. So it's been at least 6-7 years now.
6-7 years.
Is there an anniversary? Do we have to give each other watches? What's the anniversary?
I think the 7th anniversary of your time on Last Comic Standing, when one of you made it all the way to the end and the other one got eliminated before that. I think the anniversary gift would be... tears and smugness.
Oh my God!
No, I'm kidding.
Well, I always think like it's very few comedy people that I know them for years, and we still like it's still fun to hang out with them
because
you always want it to be to where it's a genuine thing. Like you know, we all know friends that we're like you know them, but you don't know them.
Right.
So you're like you know the face, but you always hope somebody else says their name. So, you know, since, oh, good, yeah. That guy. You're like, hey, I remember you.
Do you ever, sometimes at the Improv, because not that I'm trying to be all big-headed and everything, but a lot of people know who I am, but I don't know a lot of people kind of thing. Or I've met
really?
Not a lot of people, but, like, people, like, comics see me perform a lot, and they know me, but I don't necessarily know who they are.
Yes.
So a lot of times they'll come up at the Improv and go, hey, Flip. And I'm like, hey, man. Hey, what's up, buddy? how you doing, man?
I try to personalize it a little bit more with, like, dude. Like, what's up, dude? What's just going on? You know, and it has to be in the eyes.
Yeah.
The eyes. The eyes will say, like, if it's a genuine smile, like, hey, it is good to see you. I have no clue who you are. I do know who you are, but not your name. But it's good to see you. As opposed to the, hey, you know, see how my eyes were more like, hey, I don't, hey, you, person of human beingness.
Hey, breathing organism, kind of thing.
And I mean, and I feel bad because, like I said, I don't, because it's never rude for me. I'm just really bad with names and birthdays. I'm just horrible
me
with
too.
Them. So somebody can tell me their name, and their name will go like right in and out sometimes. And they said, especially, you know how it is in Hollywood, you gotta at least be good at faking like you know know people.
Right.
So with people I'm genuinely cool with, it's not hard because I'm like, yeah, I really want to get to know these people. But with people that you know you're just going to see around and it's better to know their name than to not, then I told myself I have to learn how to remember. I'm teaching myself to these little tricks.
Right.
You know, like what they say, they're repeating the name
over and over again. Yeah.
So, hey, I'm Jim. Hey, nice to meet you, Jim. I'm Ty, Jim. It's good to see
you. Ever
you
ever go
Jim.
To the gym, Jim?
You want a slim, Jim? Jim?
You look slim, Jim.
So here's a
slim Jim.
That was a gym.
Jim.
So you know what I'm saying? Like those little exercises. So now I get better at
That's good.
At recognizing stuff.
Well, like I said, it's good when you are working with somebody that you know in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And what I was saying initially about the whole Rat Pack thing, it's just like Vegas has this this kind of like this really cool history, especially for comics and entertainers. Just like from the, you know, 40s and 50s with, you know, Sinatra and Don Rickles and, you know, all the great comics of Joan Rivers, Shelley Berman, and all these guys. And then you'd hear these stories of them.
Shelley
Berman. Great dude, really nice, and one of the best, brilliant comics out there as far as improvisers and things like that.
You ever see him on The Twilight Zone? Look up old. He's in old black and white Twilight Zone episodes.
Really?
Yep. One day because I'm a huge Twilight Zone fan. So I remember when I was too scared to even watch it. So now since I have a nightlight, I can actually watch it, and it's cool.
Oh, I would. Dude, just picturing you with a night. I got my little butterfly nightlight.
My footies. But now I watch it, and I remember one time, like, I met Shelley at the Las Vegas Comedy Festival years ago.
I was there with you that time. That's right.
Yes, I told you.
That's right. Way back. Holy shit, I forgot about that.
That was actually a fun time in Vegas because I'd never been, and I was here with my friends. I was like, yo, I'm here. We're hanging out. It was cool. We tried to get, like, a $25 stripper, which that's not real, people. It doesn't happen for real.
Not
that's
in Vegas.
That's a scam. But I met Shelley, and again, I felt bad because I didn't know who he was until, like, somebody said, hey, Shelley Berman wants to talk to you. And I guess he liked the set, and he's like, you're a very funny man, blah, 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 and gave me these comments. I said, thank you. I appreciate that. Because, again, I knew this guy was in the business, of course, but I didn't know what the history of his business was. And then one day, I was watching The Twilight Zone. I got, like, this box set for Christmas, and I'm looking. I'm like, that dude looks like... And it was Shelley Berman. He's done a few Twilight Zone episodes.
Wow.
I know. So go. Remind me when we get back to LA, and I'll lend you my box set. And
oh, cool, man! Thank you.
Yep.
Yeah, actually, you know something really cool? Do you ever see that old Twilight Zone about the pawn shop owner who finds an old bottle? He's like a really nice guy, and even though his business sucks, he's still very good to the community. And then he finds this old bottle, or somebody trades this old bottle in. And it breaks, and it turns out to be a genie in the bottle.
I remember.
You remember? And he you know, grants wishes, but the wishes came...
It was more of a funny one, right? And it was him and his wife.
Right.
And they were making... Yeah, I remember that
and
one.
And then the guy wished for power, and he became Hitler.
That's right.
Okay, the guy that played the pawn shop owner? That's my cousin.
Get the hell out of here.
It's Luther Adler. And if you ever heard of Stellar Adler, who's like a very famous acting teacher. There's a theater called the Stella Adler Theater on Hollywood Boulevard.
Why have I heard it? I've heard of that one. I've heard Stella, yes.
I'm like third cousin or something
to the
Adlers.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
That's what's the
when I was a kid, that was on TV, that episode, my dad woke me up and said, I want you to watch this. This is your cousin on TV.
Dude, isn't that crazy, though? Because you think that's because it's classic, it's timeless. It's never going to be. I mean, and Rod Serling was such a great writer, dude, which is that you got to think some of the stuff was ahead of its time, even though something, you ever watch some of the time pieces of Twilight Zone where they'd be like, this is how life is going to be in like 19 in the future, and there's nothing like that. And or some stuff is like really still looks basic. Like they had like the they had one episode where it was a computer in the future and it was still the size of a wall. You're like, wow, man, the future looks backwards, dude.
Future sucks, man. But there, you know what? There are some things, like, I do this sometimes. I have an iPad, and, you know, I'll be, like, scrolling through my iPad, looking at news, or I'll video call my parents, whatever, and then I'll go, this is, like, futuristic shit. This is, like, Star Trek shit. This is, like, I'm video calling somebody, and I have, like, a newspaper on this thing, and then I can watch a movie, and I can... This is, this is future shit.
They say most smartphones have more technology in it than the first computer.
Oh, absolutely.
So...
Absolutely.
You gotta think, and people still use it for porn. Still use it for porn. That's what we strive for. We were trying to trying to streamline the porn experience. How can we do that? How can we make it to where... I mean, those holograms are gonna come in really handy, dude. They're like, yo,
no
look
pun
at my,
intended.
I know, right? Look at my Jenna Jameson app. Boop! And she just is on the wall right there. She's like, oh my God.
No, there'll be an app where like a virtual pussy comes out of the phone and you just start fucking that.
Just humping air.
Just humping,
I'm like, but it feels so real.
There's gonna be a time when just like... Our society is getting so desensitized to sex and violence that people just start fucking each other in restaurants at the dinner table kind of thing.
And like, can we get the no fucking section?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you wanted to be sat in the fucking section. Okay, we'll go over here.
Maybe dessert, though. We'll switch it over for dessert, but right now, no. We don't want to do that now. It's just not.
Can we see the dessert tray? We might want to fuck on it later.
Honey, they have the same tray. Remember? Your mom and dad came here. I'm like, what?
What? Oh, God.
That is mom and dad.
Oh, hi, mom, dad.
No, dude, that would be so crazy if they did have that.
Is that a funny bit or is that just stupid?
No, that's funny. No, it is a funny bit because you would think that, the funniness is in how simple it would be and how simple you say, can you sit us? We are still trying to work things out. First date, we don't know we want to fuck yet.
Oh, that's funny.
So can you just sit us somewhere? Where's there a casual, like a hand job section? you guys have a hand job section?
Dude,
somewhere?
This is funny shit.
I like that. It's like, can you just sit us in a hand job section?
I'm writing this down. I'm actually writing this down as we're doing this. Sit.
So if you see Flip do the bit, like, you're like, I was there in this embryonic stage.
Well, now here's the question. Whose bit is this right now?
You can have it.
Really? Are you sure?
Well, because your initial thought was
the thought, but you've inputted a lot of funny ideas.
Well, I tell you what, you do it, and let me know. We'll try it.
Tell you what,
we'll
both try it this week.
Okay,
let's try it this week.
Okay. So you take who takes the first night? Or you want to do this? You take the first show. I'll take the second show. I'll try it on the second show tonight.
Okay. And, all right.
Because it's two different audiences. Nobody knows who
did. But the late show might be more prone to dirty jokes.
Oh, that's true.
So how about this? How about since you're leaving tomorrow, tonight you take the late show.
Okay.
And then I will take it tomorrow.
Okay.
But I record all of my shows, so...
How do you record now? I thought they
don't
let you record.
No, I don't. I audio record.
Audio, okay.
Yeah, you see me wear my little lapel
mic. Oh, that's right. I got to give me one of those.
Oh, those are great.
I got to give me one.
I record every
I
one of my
the audio
shows.
Is like, is it CD ready?
Yeah, my last couple CDs I recorded with it.
I got to get one. How much did you pay for it?
Oh, $75. By the way, this is very interesting podcast talk, isn't it? How much did you pay for that voice recorder? It's okay. It's a couple years ago. I'm talking maybe 5-6 years ago. It was like $75.
Okay.
So,
I'm just asking because sometimes, like you said, with moments like this, when a bit comes up, you're like, I want to, because we improv a lot of shit on stage too,
Dessert cart. I might want to fuck on it. So, yeah, we could both. But you know what? I'll tell you what. To everybody listening, because I'm sure you're curious how this is going to end up. I will insert in the podcast my version of the joke that I'm going to be actually recording tomorrow night. So this is going to time travel shit. So right now, you will hear how the joke went when I told it right now. I'm telling you, sex is really... Sex is becoming such a natural part of our society, you know? Like, it's everywhere. It's on TV, it's online, it's in the movies. I'm sure a lot of you guys have porn on your phones. I do. But that's what it is. I think it's only a matter of time before sex just becomes so natural. It's just another annoying thing people do in public, like checking their phones or talking on their phones, you know? Like you walk into a restaurant, oh, hello, monsieur, madame, would you like to be sitting fucking or the non-fucking section? Yeah. Well, to tell you the truth, this is a first date, so can we just sit in the handjob section? Is that okay? Sit over there? Of course, follow me. By the way, would you over here, have you decided if you want some dessert? Yeah, you know, we'd like to see the desserts. We're kind of debating if we want apple pie, cheesecake, or if we're just going to fuck in the dessert cart. So, very well, sir. Very well. Okay, that's a new joke. And you got to try it sometime, you know? Sometimes it's, sometimes it's, that was a little far. But don't worry, I'll end strong. Wow. So what'd you think of that, Ty?
It was awesome.
It sucked.
I'll do two versions. All right, so ask me again.
So, Ty, what'd you think of that?
Yo, man, that shit, I can't believe it worked. It was fucking awesome.
Thank you.
And then the other version.
Okay, now the other. So, Ty, what'd you think of that?
Man, I wouldn't have tried that shit. So, I don't know, man.
No. So, I guess we'll see which version we'll end up which after tomorrow.
Which one makes the chopping block? Dun, dun, dun.
You watch Chopped?
You know what? I do. I do, man. I can't even front. It's one of those shows, man. Whenever I watch those types of shows, I feel like it's something informative about it. And every once in a while, they will make some shit where I'm like, you know what? Yeah, that does look good. I am going to actually try to make that. I mean, don't get me wrong. I cook more now. That's the thing. Like, when you live by yourself, you cook more. And that's what I've been doing. So I want to make different dishes and shit. So sometimes I watch and I'm like, you know what? I think I can make that. But some of the stuff that they get, I don't really know. And they throw them off like, yeah, you're... And I'm always to the last ingredient. That's when they lose me. Like the first two, I'm like, okay, so you want to make a main course and it is veal. I'm like, okay, I know veal. I prepared veal. Pine nuts. And I'm like, okay, all right, pine nuts. I got that. And boric acid. What? Who the fuck is cooking with boric acid?
Wait, you don't have boric acid? And dude, I have like cases of it. You want a bottle?
Well, you're making bombs. So I'm just kidding. He's not. He is not.
The only bomb was the joke that I tried just before this.
But seriously, man, like it's always that third ingredient where I'm like, come on, really? Come on, Smurf wings? Smurfs don't even have wings. What the fuck? I didn't even know they even sold Smurf wings.
I saw one where they had
that's
the.
I'm gonna try that.
That's it. No, that's a bit.
I'm gonna try that tonight.
Good. Okay. Look at this. We're writing. We're coming up with bits. I saw one where I think they it was a dessert thing, or they had to use like I think they were the Peeps, a little candy Peeps, the chicken things. Like, yeah, it's the most random shit that they got to throw in there.
And they always like, I'm always impressed, period, because they make stuff that I couldn't make. Mm-hmm. So when the judges are kind of judging them, I'm like, really? He made a fucking Statue of Liberty wing tray. You understand? It looks like the real Statue of Liberty made out of wings, and you're going to tell him he didn't like how the sauce tasted? Fuck you. Fuck you.
That's got to hurt.
Well, because you think they put all that effort into it, but I got a friend of mine that's actually on, she is on, what's the show?
MasterChef?
Yes.
Wait, who? I have a friend on MasterChef, too.
What's her name?
Monty.
I know Monty.
Is that who you're talking about?
That's who we're talking about.
Monty. If you ever watch MasterChef, Monte Carlo.
Yes. Is that very sweet lady?
Very sweet. Oh my! You know Monty?
I've known Monty now for like 4 years. Yeah. 3 or 4 years. Nah, maybe three.
I've known Monty probably since maybe 6 years.
Yeah. Super sweet, man.
And very sweet.
And dude, you know what? Her explanation for why she was on the show, I said, because at first she thought it was so basic. She thought, because she said all these people on the show and they're you know, they got these great chef culinary backgrounds and all this. And they asked me why I was on the show. And she said, look, I'm a single mom and I had to make stuff for my kid. And I just started cooking because that was cheaper. And I was like, that's the greatest story out of all of them, you know, because there's no, I did this and taught here and all this. She's just like, look, my kid was hungry. I had some peanut butter, some bread, and some boric acid. And that's pretty much it. So, and now here I am on MasterChef.
And I have I had a backlog of Smurf wings.
Yeah.
Boric acid and Smurf wings. I don't know what to do.
When was I ever going to get to use these?
I don't know.
And now? Oh, you got Smurf wings.
That's funny.
I had to try that.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I, you know what? I'll be honest. I haven't really watched MasterChef. I don't know if she did. Do you know if she's still in it?
I know she couldn't tell me because of, you know, the whole confidentiality thing, but she didn't sound bad about how it turned out. That's what she said. She said, I'm happy about how it turned out.
Oh, well, so. I know that she's, I mean, the exposure, for one, has got to be amazing.
You know, she does radio.
Radio in Arizona.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
I was working in Scottsdale.
Stand-up Scottsdale?
Yeah, yeah. I think you might have been there just before, just after I was there.
Was it about a month, a little bit less than a month ago?
How long I was there in... I think May.
No, I just left in August, like early August.
Okay, so you were there after me, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah, fun room. Fun room.
It is,
yeah.
Dude. Scottsdale's comedy scene, man, is growing.
It is.
It's growing. And I think, honestly, for a place that doesn't have, like, open mics, like, you know, Los Angeles has a ton of open mics you can go to. Whether they're all good or not is a whole nother story. But you still have that opportunity. Whereas I don't know if Scottsdale is like that. So I think that room is one of the few rooms where they can do comedy. So for them to come out, you know, and be funny and try to build, I'll say this, it's just a good place if they want to build a scene.
Mm-hmm.
It would be a perfect place. You know what I'm saying? You find a little bar or something like that. And then along with that, you'd have that club. Because that club is super fun.
It really is.
Super fun.
If you ever get out to Scottsdale, I mean, they've got a couple clubs out there. There's, I know Stand Up Live is there now.
Stand Up Live is there.
And the
Improv. Isn't there Improv?
There was a Tempe Improv. I think it closed down, but I think they might be reopening it. Not sure. Not that. That's a rumor I heard. I don't know if that's true.
That's why I auditioned for Last Comic in Tempe.
Oh, that's right.
Tempe. Oh, my God. It was such a fun crowd. I was so nervous, too.
So you got lucky because... Ty and I, again, we were both on Last Comic Standing, Season 4, which is 2006. Pardon me. And Ty, in Tempe, your showcase was at night, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it was a packed crowd, if I remember how it was, right? Wait, what are you laughing about?
Because I know what you're about to say is like the difference in the times and audiences and stuff like that.
So, and if you don't know the old Tempe Improv, it was a really beautiful club. One of the bigger clubs. I think it sat like 550 people. And when that room was packed, it was fucking hot. It was amazing. And that's great. I auditioned in Miami. That was the last city that the Last Comic Standing had the auditions in. And we did our preliminary auditions like in the early afternoon. And then the producers were like, we just want to get the fuck home. So they had our showcase at like 4 in the afternoon. And they just went down to the street and just said, please come in and watch this show. We're taping. So we had maybe 40 people in this room. And we had to do our show at 4 in the afternoon to 40 people in front of judges and the cameras and everything.
And you guys don't know, man, when you just pulling people off of the street and just telling them go, that's a hard thing, man. I feel so bad for you guys. Shit. Yeah, I'm sorry, man.
No, it was all right. I mean, it worked out for me. I still made it. But it was like, it was one of those.
Yeah, but like you still want that.
You want that energy. You want
that. Yeah, because even though with camera tricks, they can make a room of 40 look like it's packed. You just sit them in a certain area.
Oh, absolutely.
So TV, you guys don't see it the same as whereas like, you know, when you're on stage and you're like, you actually see as 40 people in a room that holds.
Like 300 or 350.
You know, you're like, wow. You know, it's almost like showing up to an orgy like like late. You know what I'm saying? And he's just like, fuck. Just giving out hand jobs today, huh? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, you'll do it. But you're like,
should have sat in the fucking section.
All right. Callback. Reference Flips podcast from, I would say, 10 minutes ago. That was about a good 10
that's,
minutes
That's
ago.
When you know it's a good podcast, when you got callbacks within it.
Yes.
I should call back another podcast that you know I didn't part of. Just say something like, well, I don't know there, Craig Gass. I mean, Moss. You'd have to know the podcast to get it.
I don't know Craig Gass. That's it. I know Craig. So
you know
I don't
Craig know, Gass.
I know Craig, but I don't know the joke. So, see, to me, it was lost.
Yeah.
But you guys who may have heard this podcast from there, tweet them. Let them know if you got that. Let them know if you got that reference.
Yes. Send a tweet out to @FlipSchultz and say, I got the reference from the Ty Burnett podcast.
Dude, that'd be so crazy. Whoever, what do you think is the longest ever callback? Like, in history of callbacks.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? That'd be, right, to research, like, because, you know, for the people that don't know, for comedians, a callback is sweet. It's like almost getting a donut with the perfect amount of jelly filling in it. You're just like, oh, my God, that's such a great donut. And that's what the callbacks are, because if you get a great callback and it works, it's on point, the audience is with you.
Well, explain, like, exactly what a callback is.
So, like, you say, like, a callback basically is a point of reference that you make in a joke that you did before, and then you do something later, and then you call that same point of reference back or something like it to trigger the same thought of the previous thought. So, basically, like, I, you know, my joke about the midget, the albino midget, I said, man, that's, I won't tell you guys the whole joke, but part of the joke is where I say, yeah, I saw an albino midget. I say, that's weird. I would hate to have to call that in, you know? Because the first part of the joke is, I said, well, the first part of the joke is, I was like, man, I saw an albino midget. I didn't know what to do. I was like, do I make a wish? So that's the, boom, initial. So then I go into the rest of the joke, and I say, man, if I ever saw one, like, what if one committed a crime? I said, I would hate to have to call that in. And like, Breaker, we got a robbery in progress. Suspects identified as an albino midget. Yeah, I did make a wish. You know what I'm saying? So like, the callback is that. And so when that gets a laugh, that, and so I always wonder, like, who has like a long, because sometimes you get a callback and something, like, you ever seen a really good movie? Mm-hmm. And it's a reference from way earlier in the movie, and you're like, oh, that's hilarious. Mel Brooks was good at that.
Totally. Oh, God. Really, yeah, like, I'm trying to think of a good Mel Brooks callback reference.
I want to say...
Oh, well, like, okay, perfect example. History of the World Part 1. Did you see it?
Yeah, yeah.
With, if you've seen History of the World Part 1, you know that the movie is pretty much broken into sections, like, different parts of history that Mel Brooks spoofs. And there's the Roman Empire, which is a brilliant segment. And in the segment is Gregory Hines... As a slave
late,
in Rome,
late great Gregory Hines,
late great wonderfully brilliant Gregory Hines, who played Josephus in that scene, in that section, and then the movie ends. The Roman Empire ends. It goes to another thing, and then it goes to the French Revolution. And in the French Revolution, there's a scene where Mel Brooks, playing another part, another character, is about to be executed, and then Gregory Hines rides in the scene from the Roman Empire,
same horse
that was in the Roman Empire scene. And so that's a great callback, bringing that
and
character
nobody
back.
Even questioned it. They're just like, yeah, of course he shows up.
Yeah.
He wasn't even in that time period, but okay.
Yeah.
You know what's crazy? Fun fact. You know who was up for the part of Josephus before Gregory Hines?
Pryor?
Yes.
Makes sense. Because you know why?
Because he not co-wrote, because that was Blazing Saddles.
But yeah, you're on the right track.
Tell me.
I don't know this fact. I'm assuming, just based on the Blazing Saddles story. For those who don't know, Richard Pryor co-wrote Blazing Saddles with Mel Brooks, and he was originally going to play
the sheriff,
but I guess studio wanted somebody more with more name recognition.
No. What it was that Pryor. It was kind of Pryor's fault of why he didn't, because his reputation at the time. To most comics, most comedians. Pryor can do no wrong. Like, everything that he did that was wrong made him Richard Pryor. So among comics. But in Hollywood, studios don't look at shit the same way. They look at it kind of like, you know, is it going to cost them money? You know what I'm saying? What demographic does this go out to? And what message is it sending? And so at the time, Pryor was brilliant. They knew that. You know, they knew he could act. They knew that he had comedic chops. They knew he could write, of course. But his reputation away from the camera, like with the coke and the showing up late and the tantrums and stuff like that, which I don't know how much of that's true because, of course, I wasn't around like that at the time. But that's what the studio was worried about, that. They were like, yeah, we don't want to have to deal with that headache. You know what I'm saying? We don't want to have to deal with his drama or anything like that. And Mel Brooks was like, no, I'm telling you, he's good. And they were like, we're not going to do it. So he had to go back to Pryor and tell Pryor that he couldn't
That's interesting.
Play the part.
I never really knew that. I thought it was just name brand. I thought Quavon Little was more of a name.
No. As a matter of fact, Pryor, because I always look back at it, which is, that's one of those weird moments, in movie history or story, I guess, whatever. But Because you look at Cleavon Little, he gave a great performance. I couldn't really see him not playing that part, but also was like, man, what if Richard Pryor played it? You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. So it's always that what if, but it's no disrespect to Cleavon because he played it great, and every time I watch it, I expect Cleavon to do his thing. When he sings at the beginning, I get no kick from champagne.
The old Negro spiritual.
Oh, my God. The Camp Town Ladies. Yeah, oh, man. So it was a great movie. But, you know, when always looking at credits now, just to see Richard Pryor's name associated with this movie. And Madeline Kahn is also.
Oh, God. And Harvey Korman.
Yeah. You talking about great timing. You know what I saw a year ago? And this is what we were talking about before with callbacks of a great movie. Young Frankenstein.
Oh, one man. Of the best.
I fucking laughed so my many... ass off.
Marty Feldman.
Yeah.
Marty fucking Feldman. Yeah. You want to talk about a man who just owned every bit of awkwardness that he had, exploited it to the most brilliant percentage, and could hit beats like nobody else.
Great comic timing, dude. Great comic timing.
Just that one scene, like when Madeline Kahn shows up, like at the castle, and Gene Wilder goes to Marty Feldman, goes, Igor, grab the bags, and goes, okay, you take the blonde in the skirt, I'll take the one with the mink. You know, just does a grouch show, which is so fucking great.
My favorite scene is with the bookcase. When it's just the physical part, when he takes the book, he's like, okay, I'm going to take the candle out and wait, sees what happens. He pulls it out, and his face gets slammed against it. He's like, Put the candle back. Dude, I had to ask him to turn. I was like, you got to stop with this. I'm laughing so hard, dude. It was ridiculous. So like I said, whenever I see those kind of movies, I'm always like, yeah, the writing is so great in those things. And that's why I think as comedians, we gravitate towards those types of things. And don't get me wrong, it doesn't mean that we don't like the slapsticky stuff, because some of that stuff is funny too.
Yeah.
You know, like Dodgeball.
Yeah.
Dodgeball was a great movie.
Very funny movie.
I love when the joke is in the subtlety sometime, and that's what those movies are all about. So yeah, as I said, Pryor had a lot of talents, man, and a lot of people didn't know that this dude was this great. You know, so anytime.
So wait a minute. So then I think I'm because I was gonna go somewhere with my explanation about why I didn't think he was in History of the World, why Gregory Hines got the role, but you probably know more. Why didn't it go to Pryor then, do you know?
Oh, because of his... It didn't go to Pryor because of his reputation.
Wait, are you talking about in History of the World and in Blazing Saddles?
No. Oh, I think it contributed to both movies, but one of them... I think Mel Brooks fought more for him in Blazing Saddles, more, as opposed to the other one where it might have been a little bit more of the Gregory Hines is a he's a safe name, as opposed to not so much.
Because History of the World came out around 81, and by that time Pryor had done Live on the Sunset Strip. Has he done Live on the Sunset Strip at that?
No, wait.
No, Blazing Saddles was first. History of the World was
no way okay. Out. So no, then after that, it was. But you know, that's also when did Pryor light himself on fire, though.
Probably I think around 2:30 in the morning.
No, I mean. What?
Oh, I mean, what? You didn't mean that specific.
No, I mean.
I think Pryor. I'm trying to because
that might have been the reason. Is because it may have been.
Ooh, interesting.
It may have had something to do with. Because again, you got to understand. Like he went through that period where he was reckless, dude.
Yeah.
And then it culminated in him lighting himself on fire, which, again, I can't think of the year. But if that happened, it might have been around that, you know.
He did jokes about that. Like, when you know, I remember that joke where he goes, when you're running down the street on fire, people let you through.
Yeah. Like, oh, and then when he lights the match, and he's like, people are like, who is this? Like, this Richard Pryor running down the street.
Yeah.
And he was holding the match. Was
that from Live on the Sunset Strip?
Yes.
Okay, so that might have... I don't remember if that was early 70s or mid 80s. Mid 80s.
It was in the 80s.
Okay,
so. Live on Sunset Strip was in the 80s.
So, because again, History of the World was like, it came out in 81, so it had to be shot in like 80. So maybe it was before that.
I think it may have had to do with it was something more personal, but not in a name thing now. It was just more about
His lifestyle.
And, you know, like with studios, dude, they're like, it's the bottom line, the dollar.
Yeah.
Like, is, how much is this costing us? And you got to be a mega, mega, mega moneymaker for them to not give a fuck about what you do. I mean, the only other person you've seen nowadays that can do that shit is Charlie Sheen, yeah. Maybe. Robert Downey Jr. got a lot of breaks, you know, but that's also talent-based, too. You know what I'm saying? Robert Downey Jr. was, you know, he woke up in somebody else's house. You must really be able to act if they can say, oh, you know what? That's fine. He just woke up in some little girl's room. It's fine. He's totally fine. Put him in Iron Man.
Put him in, yeah.
Yeah,
he'd make a good Charlie Chaplin because he's
yes.
a tramp.
Yeah,
they're both little tramps.
See,
so
and that's where the talent comes in. And you look at now, you flip that, and you look at people like Terrell Owens, and you're like, see, you must not be talented enough for people to put up with your bullshit. And that's it's the
see, we're getting into sports now, and I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, okay, to put it, bring it back to sports, Lindsay Lohan.
She's not talented enough.
No.
Wow.
She's not talented enough, I don't think, to warrant all of the behavior that she's doing that for studios to say, okay, we're fine. We'll make a case. We'll help you out. Now, if she was making all that money for him, no robbery charges, no nothing.
Yeah, but you know what? It's now her notoriety that is making her a commodity. It's almost like it was almost like the Charlie Sheen thing for a while. Like, people just want to see what kind of train wreck she could be. Like, she's playing Elizabeth Taylor in that in this new Lifetime movie or whatever. And I'm curious, just because everybody loves a comeback story. That's why Robert Downey Jr. and Charlie Sheen are so kind of beloved, because we like we've seen him fall, now we're gonna watch the same with Britney Spears, and now she's on the X Factor and everything. So I think Lindsay Lohan has that kind of appeal, but it just seems that like Robert Downey and Charlie Sheen and Britney Spears, once they fucked up and they realized they fucked up and they were demonized, they started making themselves better again, and they really didn't fuck up again.
Right.
Whereas Lindsay. Even Jeez. Though people are giving her more chances now, she's still fucking up. She's back in the news about she's almost a suspect in another robbery.
And that's the thing, like, how much money have you blown through to where you are robbing people?
Yeah. Honestly, this is all speculation, you know, based on just what I'm reading online about all this, but if it's really true...
No, Lindsay just tweeted me. She said it's true.
No,
I'm just kidding.
Well, then, okay, we heard it first. Complain to Ty Barnett if you...
No.
At
no.
Ty Barnett on Twitter...
Oh my god! Yeah, there you go. That's it.
Are you not Tarbonet?
I'm on Twitter, but that's not. It's not Ty Barnett.
We'll get to that later.
It's a boxer named Ty Barnett.
Is it really?
There's a boxer named Ty Barnett.
So, what are you, the real Ty Barnett or Ty Barnett comedy?
Real deal, Ty Barnett. Well, I mean, I shouldn't say it like that. I want the boxer to come after me. I'm like, yo, I don't need that drama in my life. Ty Barnett versus Ty Barnett. I'm like,
the Sunday, the man with the funny versus the man with the fists of honey.
And like, can we just tell jokes? I'll fight you with jokes, and that's it. Yeah.
See, you know, I would love that. Would be so much fun. That you know, remember, like in the old, like the 80s breakdancing movies, like Breakin' and Electric Boogaloo, and all those. They would have dancing fights. That would be the way they fought. They just come up to other space and start doing tricks and breakdance and go,
battle
yo.
To cry.
Yeah. Do do da da do do da da. That'd be great if comics could do that. Like, gangs of comics just getting together and just having, like, a joke off. Not like a Your Mama's So Fat, but like, yo, you ever noticed you get on airplanes and those peanut bags are so small? You know, something.
And then, well, you gotta pump your chest.
Yeah, but, yeah, I'm like.
And then do a headspan.
no break, just all.
No
just,
dancing?
Yo, tip your waitress, motherfucker.
Oh, that. Yeah. Well, now, some people actually do that in clubs now. The motherfucker. They have to. It depends on the audience. If it's a late Friday night, you may have to throw in a couple.
Or let me ask you a question. Because Ty, if you know Ty, you can't see him now, but Ty is, you are a black gentleman.
What?
No, because, and I don't want to generalize or stereotype, but you know, a lot of black comics are known for being urban, are known for being that kind of Def Jam kind of comic. You are the furthest thing from that. You don't, and I hate, again, to generalize, but it seems to me a lot of urban comics rely more on performance than writing.
Well...
Do you ever feel, like, when you play certain rooms, do you ever feel pressured that you need to go that way, or do you stick to your guns no matter what the room and do the act that you want to do?
Well, here's the thing, man. You know what I'm saying? No, I'm just kidding. before, I will say this, before I got on television, yes, that pressure was there, because if in the black community, and it's hard sometimes because we like to put comedy in these different categories. That's why I like people like Richard Pryor and Chappelle and Chris Rock, because these are the guys that are of color, but yet their acts had a broad fan base, mm-hmm. you know? So I've always wanted my act to be, like, when I first started in Seattle, I would write a black set and a white set, because there's only one black room that you could go to in the city, and they wanted to hear the same jokes. So my joke list stayed very short, as opposed to whenever I went to these rooms where it's more mixed or more white audience, I could talk about everything. And so that list got longer and longer, and I was like, man, fuck that. I'd just rather write what I think is funny. I'm not going to write for black people or white people. I'm going to write what I think is funny, and I just got to go from there. And so it started to work, and then once I got on Last Comic, and then people started seeing you more, and then they know, okay, well, this is Ty. These are the jokes that he does. He writes. He has that, what they call, I hate when they call it intelligent comedy, because to me it's just, I am talking about regular stuff, mm-hmm. and I just happen to be enunciating, you know what I'm saying? It's not, I don't have to curse. I don't really have to curse to get the funny out. So it helped after that. So when I would go into these rooms after that, where it would be more, and then I noticed more black people were coming to the shows already knowing this is what this guy does. Yeah, exactly. This is Ty. We're not going to see all that Def Jam shit from him, because that's not what he does, but he is going to be funny. And so from that, it gave me the confidence to do more. Then I would look in the audience and see more and more black faces, more and more diverse audiences. And so now it's to the point where I walk in rooms and I see a good mix of people, and they know, we expect this from you. So even when, like, if I even try to go into some other shit that I don't do, people are like, come on, you don't need to do that. That's not you, man. And so I stay in my zone, which is, I stick to the writing, because the writing is timeless. And we, like I said, this is what we're talking about with movies. Like, I can watch Young Frankenstein, Blazing Saddles years from now and still laugh at it, because the writing in it is so funny. It's you can't deny it, right? And that's what I want my jokes. I've always wanted my jokes to be, because, you know, if you ever read a joke and you laughed at it when you read it, mm-hmm. and you know what I'm saying, or some jokes that are just physically, you can only see them and they're funny. I want my jokes to be to where either way, you look at him like, yeah, that's funny, as he performs it, and then you read it, or someone else tells you that joke, and you're like, yeah, that's fucking funny. It's funny. Like I said, like we were talking about last night with the joke about the music, which you guys don't know, Flip will do it. You'll see him do this joke down the road with music, and you'll see it, and it'll be funny. But I'm saying, that's more in the things of where what you say translates to what it is that you put out there. Mm-hmm. So whenever I go into these rooms now, I never go into it with a black attitude or a white attitude. I go into it with a Ty Barnett. Attitude. Yeah, funny. Ty Barnett, this is what it is. This is what I thought was funny. If you dig it, you dig it. And that, it's real simple in some cases, but it's complex in another way. With most audiences, especially black audiences, what I found is if they know that that's you, if it's really you and what you're doing, they'll ride with you. They'll go with you and go, do your thing. But when they see you're fake, when they see you're full of shit, they call you on it easily. And so now I don't think about it. It's not a black-white thing for me anymore. I gave that up a long time ago. And when I start seeing people like Chappelle excel, and like, I mean, everybody watched Chappelle's show. Mm-hmm. Everybody. There was nobody that I didn't know that didn't watch it. And I was like, and I think about this. You haven't seen a person since then have that kind of broad of appeal on that scale as Chappelle.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Other people, they're polarized by certain people. Like Patrice, God rest his soul. Like Patrice O'Neal. Hilarious. Funny as fuck. But a lot of white people didn't know who he was until he died. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So you don't find that same kind of like appeal to where you could just walk in and everybody's just, they're just watching, because you, and I thought about this earlier, so let me ask you this. Do you feel like, because you know, they put all these things in categories. They say it's the Latino night at the club, or mm-hmm. it's the chocolate sundae nights, you know what I'm saying, or the refried whatever night, or the Asian explosion
night. Right, or the Jews own everything night.
That's another one. Is that a night, or is it just a...
No, it's just a fact.
Okay,
just a fact.
There we go. Now, do you feel, as a comic of being white, do you feel it's easier to walk into rooms because no one has any kind of expectations on you to do anything of anything specific? No one expects you to go up there and do white jokes, is what I'm saying. So do you feel at ease when you go on stage and they say, well, here's Flip, you know, because if I go up there as a black guy and let's say no one's heard of Ty Barnett, and I go up there as a black guy, people are going to expect me to do black jokes and dance on stage, or if I was Asian. But with you, it's not that. So do you walk up there with a different kind of...
Are you talking about if I go up on like a specific night or just any night?
Well, both. Like, I know when you walk into it, like if you walk into a regular room, you probably don't think it. But let's say you happen to do a room and it is more of a mix. It's a more diverse crowd. It's not mostly white. It's a good mix.
You know, I would just probably go up there and just do my set. You know, not caring about, you know, maybe if somebody earlier referenced something that got a laugh and I knew I had a joke about that specifically and I knew that subject might work in this room, you know, I might throw that into the mix. But generally, I wouldn't try to be any specific kind of comedy.
See, and that's the thing. Like, I don't feel, and I always tell people, I feel like white comics get more leeway in this business, and not saying that, okay.
Well, here's the big drawback about being, especially like for me, just being a white guy, there are thousands of me out there. There are really a lot of funny white guys, and the problem is it's oversaturation. Right. Whereas really funny, talented, you know, black guys or Asian guys or Mexican or women or whatever have a much better shot of getting more noticed because they stand out from the, again, oversaturation of just plain funny white. Right. Like Last Comic Standing, perfectly. When we were there in the finals, when there were 40 of us, you know, I mean, I'm not dumb. I knew that they were casting a show too.
Right.
So they weren't. It wasn't just really about who was the funniest. It's who would be diverse and make a good cast of a show.
Right.
And I remember looking around and just seeing so many white guys, and I'm like, fuck, this is not bode well in my favor because it's hard for me to stand out among these guys.
But if they're casting, let's say 12 people, was it 10 or 12? I don't know.
It was 12 that year.
So if they're casting 12, you know at least 7 of them have to be white. At least.
Well.
At very least. So, because they got to have one or two minorities in there, so they'll pick one or two black guys. They'll usually pick, and they put our categories in the same category sometimes. It might either be black or female. Like, okay, can we get a black female, or do we got to get a black guy and a black female?
Well, that's what there was on that season. It was you and...
Me and Roz.
Roz.
So, and then if you have the other category, which is the X Factor, which, like, say, people like Josh, who's a white guy, but
with cerebral palsy.
So... For him, I mean, I don't want to say it was a lock, but I mean, how could you not cast a show with somebody? And Josh is a great guy.
And Josh is funny too. That's
funny and a great guy. How could you not put him? So that we already knew that slot was already taken. Yeah. He's going to be on the show. So for you as a white guy, like, you know that they're going to at least cast two or three. You have a.
But then here's how I saw it too, and this is especially after the casting was done. I'm trying to remember everybody from that season, but you had Josh Blue, very funny. But he had a handicap, which right. gave him a differential charm about him.
Right.
Then you also had Chris Porter, who was a very great guy, very funny, but had a very cool style about him. He wasn't a good looking guy. He was kind of like that wacky looking guy, mm-hmm. and he was like the stoner guy. Then you had Jerry D, who was a very good looking guy and very funny too. And there was I don't think there was like just a general looking right, white guy, yeah. you know.
You remember Joey Gay?
Oh, that's right, Joey was on that season.
Joey Gay was
Joey was a loudmouth New Yorker.
That's true. Okay.
And then you had
Rebecca
Corey, who was again, she was like the Chris Porter. Nothing against Rebecca, but she's like a very short girl, kind of hyper, little awkward, weird girl.
Sexy.
And she is sexy.
She is.
It's the strangest kind of sexy, but it is sexy. But then you also
like
had...
She'll burp, but you'll still want to do her. You'll still want to do her.
Depends where she's burping out of. But you had, like, Kristen Key.
Yes, very nice. Yep,
very nice, but, you know...
You had April
Macy, who's the hot white girl. You had Stella, which was a fucking train wreck.
No. Oh, yeah, I remember Stella. Why can't I think of her name right now?
Which one?
Older lady.
Michelle.
Michelle Ballon.
Yes. Yeah, very, very funny.
Yeah, and you're talking about when I say pro.
Oh, God, yeah.
That lady had tons of material, dude. Tons of fucking material. We felt so bad because she had to challenge so many people, but she knocked all of them out, dude. And we were just like, yo, she's good. You can't fuck with her. She's great, man. Yeah. So, so that's why I'll say, man, when I look at like these comedy clubs now and who they bring in, I see a lot of white guys getting these opportunities a lot. And I won't name the club. I'll just give you a prime example. I just did a guest spot at a club in Pennsylvania, we'll just say that. And I looked at the list of people that they had there, and I'm watching the show. Because my thing is, I always watch the audience.
Oh, yeah.
The booker is one thing. A booker may have issues or not, but the audience is not going to bullshit. Even if they got in for free, they're not going to laugh at it if they don't think it's funny. Oh. That's bottom line. So I'm watching the audience, and I'm watching these regular guys go up, and I'm like, I go up and do a guest spot, kill it. And people come up and it's like, yo, you should have been hell. I'm like, and they're like, why aren't you playing the club? I was like, I don't know why I'm not playing the club. I couldn't tell you why I'm not playing the club. So you figure, if this is what people are seeing, these opportunities are going to certain people. Now, I get it. There is also, like you said, there's not the regular white guy. And there's the regular white guy, and there's the hunky white guy, and then there's the off-the-wall white guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I still think more of those opportunities go there first. Because, I mean, don't get me wrong, man. I love America. I do. But we still got some issues, man. We still got issues that, and I'm sorry if this gets weird for you guys out there, but I just see such a divide still in this. Because, we travel the country. We see it. You know what I'm saying? So we know, like, if you live in your city, then you live in your city, and all you know is what you see on the news or what you hear. But if you go into a city and you see how they are in Boston, and then you go down south to Mississippi, and you know that you're going to notice a difference between Flip being in Boston and Flip being in Mississippi.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's a huge difference, especially with you being Jewish. Same thing. People are going to look at, and that's just where we are. And that kind of translates into some of these comedy venues, too, because they're like, now let me ask you this. How many black people have come up to you and said, you were pretty funny?
I couldn't give you a number, it's happened, but not as much, let's be honest, not as much as white people or Latino people.
But now, okay, so let's say the Latino people and the black people that have said something to you, is it more like, you're funny? Or was it like, you were funny? Like, they're surprised that you were funny.
Mostly the surprised funny.
See? As opposed to like a white person coming to you and saying, you're funny.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so even as you as the comic, it still surprises you a little bit when it's natural. It's just naturally what it is. When another culture embraces us and says, because like I said, when old white people say I'm funny, I'm like, man, all right.
Yeah.
Let's look at that. Old white people say I'm funny.
You know what's like fucking with me now? It's like, I guess it's just, because we were talking about this too, as far as we're getting older and maturing. And I know my writing, especially now that I'm married, is skewing to that kind of,
right,
to marriage material, only because it's this new adventure in my life.
Right.
And yes, the subject has been talked about millions of times by comedians.
But not from your perspective.
Exactly. But now after a show, because I was always mainly getting like younger people going, oh, dude, so fucking funny, and older people going, oh, it's nice. Now it's like a little bit of, now it's more of both. I had the older people going, oh, my wife does this too.
Mm-hmm.
And the younger people going, yo, dude, that was funny.
Yeah.
So it's like you start seeing how you're crossing over to another demographic.
And that's awesome. It's great because it's part of a real evolution as opposed to a manufactured evolution where you're like, okay, I'm this age and I got to start talking about this stuff now. No, it's like I'm going to talk about what I'm really experiencing at this age right now.
Yep.
So like you said, I'm experiencing marriage for real. Like, this is what, I'm not making up jokes about what it would be like to be married. I'm making up jokes because this is really what's
happening.
And so people, they identify with that, so they gravitate towards that because, like I said, it is a real situation, and it's not something, like I told you, remember I said earlier, the audience can tell mm-hmm. when it's full, when you're full of shit or when you're genuine.
Talking from the heart, yeah.
You know, like, I used to not talk about my kids at first, and it was not for a specific reason. I just didn't have anything to say about them that I thought was funny at the time. I was just like, I got kids. And then when I started talking about the things that would happen, because we started doing more things, and they're growing up, and they're having their adventures, and we're having our adventures together and stuff. And so when those things started happening, I started talking about them, I noticed the difference in the audience. Like, it wouldn't matter, it wouldn't matter what I was talking about before, if they were with me or not. Whenever I started talking about my kids, it always, like, they were always attentive. Always like, okay, I want to hear what this guy's got to say about his, mm-hmm. his kids, his family. Let's hear what he's going to say. And it was such, like, and I could see the energy shift to where they settled in now. They're like, okay,
yeah.
You're a real person.
Yeah.
You're a human being.
That's like the thing. When you really start opening up personally to an audience, I think, like exactly what you said, they get more attentive because most of them can relate. Or Right. Most of them, like, want to know about you, not just the wacky, you know, jokes. And like, oh, you have a life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Allison, my wife and I, we go on the road together sometimes. And
road sex.
I always know I'm getting laid. That's the thing. Like, I know I could get laid after the show. No pressure. But the thing is, like, during Allison's show, she never says who her husband is. And during my show, I never mention that the girl you just saw before me is my wife.
Right.
So I tell all the stories about being married and everything. And then at the end of my act, I reveal that it's her. And the audience, it's like, we've had so many people come up to us saying that was like the best surprise ever.
Oh, nice.
Because they suddenly go, oh my God, and they feel now that they're part of our, not our comedy life, our personal life now, because they know things, and they could relate who those stories are about now.
They love that because, like I said, most people come to shows to escape whatever they're dealing with. Not necessarily escape, but kind of forget.
Yeah.
A little bit. Let's,
a vacation from your own life.
I want to hear what you got. What happened with you today? You know? So when they can grasp onto something like that, and they're like, oh my God, I didn't even know. That was so cute. That was a great story. You want those moments because those are the things that people will remember. Absolutely. Those are the things that they take with them, you know, home. And
that's what they talk about. And by the way, okay, we're to the point of the podcast. It's talking about fun, memorable moments. This is a little part of the podcast called The Skippy Green Show.
Oh, shit.
It's The Skippy Green Show!
Hello, Ty.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. You could call me Skippy, Mr. Green, if you want to get formal. Mr. Skippy Green, if you want to get very formal. Or your royal huge dickness, if you want to get prolific.
I'm going to stick with Skippy.
It's a good call. Good call. All right, Ty. This is the part of the... This is my show. This is my part of the show. Now, here's what you got to do. In 10 words exactly, answer the question. 10 words exactly. Not 11, not 9. 10 words exactly. Answer the following question. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
All right. What was the most interesting kind of food you've ever eaten off a naked woman? And why?
Fuck. Okay. All right, no, that doesn't count as a word. Okay.
All right, we're not counting yet.
All right, let's see. Wait, let me think. Hold on.
Okay, this isn't Jeopardy. There's no ring-a-ding theme song here.
It was whipped cream because it was available to us.
Cool Whip? Was it Cool Whip?
The spray one. This red.
I tell you, usually when I put cream on a woman, it sprays out too. But it's not the kind that you'd want to put on a Sunday.
Ty, this has been fun, man. I hope you had fun.
Awesome, I did.
Okay, awesome. And if people want to get a hold of you or see you anywhere, where can they go online or whatever?
Website, comedian Ty Barnett. The website is tybarnett.net. tybarnett.net.
That's B-A-R-R.
B-A-R-N-E-T-T? Yes, sir.
One R, two T's.
And then there is the Facebook, Comedian Ty Barnett. That one is Comedian Ty Barnett. And then Twitter, T-Barnett23. T-Barnett23.
You got that? So check out Ty, and they can get your schedule and everything on your website?
Yes, I'm going to update it some more. I just been on the road a lot and kind of lazy, so let me work on that. I will take care of it.
Well, his updating his website might be lazy, but his comedy show definitely isn't. If he's coming to your town, please go see him. Ty is incredibly funny, one of the better comics on the road and in the business right now. And, of course, you guys know you can always check me out, flipisfunny.com, facebook.com/flipschultz, #2, Twitter @flipschultz, and also Google+. And my schedule is up on my website. I know that if anybody is in the New Mexico area, I will be doing a show at the University of New Mexico, or the University of Northern New Mexico, Eastern New Mexico University. There we go. Eastern New Mexico University, September, a week from Thursday. So whatever, a week from this Thursday, Jesus Christ, that'd be tomorrow.
So if you're looking for a place to take any newly smuggled in relatives, take them to see Flip.
Take them to see me, September 6th. That's what it was, especially if you're at the school. And you can check all my other dates on my website. And don't forget, guys, go if you got a chance, you haven't seen Breaking Wind yet. That's the movie that I did, spoofs Twilight. You can still get it on Amazon and iTunes. It's a silly, silly juvenile spoof movie, but it is funny. And you guys, as always, you've been wonderful. Thank you for subscribing. Leave a nice comment on iTunes or on the website at whatsfordinnerpodcast.com. Really appreciate it. And I will talk to you guys next week. Bye.